Okay. Thank you, ladies, for reading. And so then I get to introduce our speaker. And our speaker, gosh, he was here when I got here some almost 21 years ago. We used to meet, the alumni used to meet, the alumni steering committee used to meet down at the Pro North building, and he'd always sit, you know, along the side of the wall. And a few years, and I used to, when I got here, it was like, oh, I want what this person had. Or, you know, at the time, Sam Anders was here, and Sam, you know, a little short, dwarf, kind of cute little thing, a little gnome. I used to put Sam on this pedestal, and, you know, Sam said, you're only as close as your next drink, or something to that effect. I'm not really sure. I'm probably paraphrasing it, but I used to watch Bill at every event that we had, whether it was Spring Fling or, you know, the Super Bowl party. Back then we did a whole bunch of other stuff, and COVID kind of changed a little bit of that. But it really wasn't until, I think it was in 2021, it was during, you know, the height of COVID, and I got to watch through Facebook, because we couldn't go face-to-face, Bill worked through something that, and I'm sure he'll share a little bit about it, but worked through something with grace and dignity and really relied heavily on the higher power. And he conveyed that, whether he knew this or not, he conveyed that through his Facebook posts. And, you know, I know that no matter what happens in my life, that I always have a higher power that I can lean on as well. But it was really nice to watch someone else do that and know that this program really works. So with that, I'll give you Bill.
Don, you could have kept talking for a while.
Bill, alcoholic.
Can everybody hear me okay? Can I back up a little bit? No, I seem so silly. Okay. Get a couple housekeeping things out of the way. My sobriety date is May 12, 1999. And for that, I have these rooms, the people in these rooms, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Good sponsorship and good friends. Here's the other thing, let's get out of the way. So what Don was alluding to was about 2.5 years ago, I was diagnosed with an incurable cancer. So I get to take chemo, but it doesn't do anything except just keep it at bay, right? So the reason I'm telling you this is if I perceive that my story is really sucking and everybody's like looking around like, who is this guy? I'm gonna start like doing this. Seriously, and act like I'm going to pass out, all right? And then I'll look to my wife, and they'll come put me in a chair, and then I won't have to go through the rest of it. They get somebody else. They think I'm kidding. They don't know me, do they? Okay, let's get going. First of all, thank you for being here. I walked into the doors of the Ridgeview Institute on January 29th, 1999. That was a long time ago. I didn't get sober till May 12th of 99. All right. And I did not stay in Ridgeview for 5 months. So that means that, you know, after a little bit of time here, I decided that I still needed to drink. Okay. The night before I came in here on the 29th of January, I was sitting above where the Serenity Garden is now in my car, and I had a bottle, and I don't even remember what kind of booze it was at this point, but I had a bottle, and a woman I was dating was next to me, and she was trying to get me to go ahead and go into the recovery area, right, so they could, you know, take my vitals and put me in a room. And the one thing I was not going to do was walk in these doors while I still had alcohol in my bottle. Does anybody understand that? Okay. I was not going to chuck out whatever it was. And it was probably good stuff, too, because I was in the restaurant business at the time. And I could just go into the old liquor room and take what I want. All right. So I decided it was not a good idea to go in to Reggio on the 29th. So on the 28th, after I had drank all the alcohol, I drove back to where I was staying at. Of course, drunk off my hoo-hoo, and I'm sure there was a lot of argument from the lady I was seeing at the time about not driving, you know, but I wasn't very good when people told me that I couldn't drive either. That really pissed me off. I hated it. I hated it because I knew I could drive no matter, you know, no matter what. All right. So we came back the next day. I was good and hungover, and I was really angry. I don't know if any of you ever felt this way, but when somebody told me I was going to have to be put away and told to do what other people told me to do, I didn't like it. And so I was really angry. And I was ready to fight. Okay? That's part of my story. Reggio threatened on many occasions to tie me up. Because when I came back in that 5-month period where I didn't get sober, I was more angry every time. There was a guy named Richard Morgan who was my case manager. He would come in and make fun of me. All right? And he was about this tall. How tall? Yeah, about this tall. But he was also like a 7th-degree black belt. All right? So he would come in and make fun of me and call me, you know, all sorts of names and try to calm me down. But all I wanted to do was fight. And the reason I wanted to fight was because I was really scared, because the life I lived for so many years, I knew had to be done with. I got to that point that the big book talks about where I can't drink and I can't not drink. I was at that stepping off point. All right. And I knew it, and I didn't like it a bit. I didn't like it a bit. So anyway, I spent some time here at Reggio the first time from the 31st, or for the 30th through, I think I stayed 5 or 6 weeks. I immediately, they used to have, I don't know if they still do this here, but they'd have a little ceremony where people go around the room and everybody, there was like a little coin and everybody would say a nice thing to you. Bill, you're so great. You're going to stay sober longer than Bill Wilson. And all right, and everybody gave me hugs, and I had my stuff packed, and it was in the car, and I drove straight to the liquor store. And that is the truth. Went right over to Windy Hill Road in Mayretta, and I got booze. All right, because I certainly wasn't ready, and I certainly hadn't been honest while I was in treatment. All right, I had certainly tried to pick up a bunch of women. And I'm not bragging when I say that. I'm looking back going, you know, what I did in that time, okay, was not focused on myself or my recovery. I was playing games. Guess what? That wasn't the only time I did that. They brought me back in. 3 days later, I drank the whole weekend, called my case manager crying. Came back in, I stayed another week or 10 days, got out, okay, went into a 3-quarter house, and and gave up my career that I had been in for a long time because I didn't think it was wise for this alcoholic to continue to work in the full-service restaurant business where there was lots of booze and stuff. Okay? So I left that and went to work being a handyman, helping somebody out who was working on old houses. But that didn't fix it either. Okay, I went to meetings. Guys, I went to meetings every day. All right, I came to aftercare. I came to alumni every time. All right, and as soon as I got the chance, I went right back out and drank again. And I kept getting more miserable by the minute. All right, I knew it was all coming to an end at some point. So that's the background. Okay, let's talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. All right, what it was like. Gracious. I was born to an alcoholic father and a mother who loved Valium. All right, what do you know what Valium is? Am I too old? Am I talking out of turn? We used to call it, you know, back then it was Valium. Now everybody's taking Xanax, right, or something like that. But my mom loved to be low. All right, she didn't want to deal with life, and so she stayed high on Valium. And if a doctor didn't give her enough, what did she do? Went to another doctor. All right, and went to another doctor. And I didn't even know till later on that she was in treatment too when I was a kid. To dry her out. That's awesome. I'd have loved to be able to hold that over her after that sober. Anyway, but I couldn't because she never got sober. Okay. My dad was in the Marine Corps. We lived all over the place. Dad retired as a master gunnery sergeant. Back in the Marine Corps in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, master gunnery sergeants for the most part were mean SOBs. Okay, and I still say to this day, sir and ma'am to everybody. I can't help it. I just do. And I'm older than crap. So, Dad drank a lot. But everybody on the bases drank a lot. That's what they did on the weekends. Got together Friday night. It didn't stop till sometime Sunday. And all the men drank. And all the women smoked Salems and bitched about the husbands. Okay? I remember it really, really well. So, you know, I thought, this drinking, hanging out with a bunch of guys things seems pretty cool. I think someday I'll do that. Okay? Dad never got sober. He did say he got sober and quit drinking, but I found the empties in the trash when, you know, had moved to and retired to Michigan by that time. Go Blue! And nobody will appreciate that. And anyway, so the dogs would tear the trash out of now and there, and there'd be like 78 Stroh's beer cans. And I would say, Dad, I thought you quit drinking. Why is all these beer cans laying around? Right? Oh, you know, I think somebody threw them out in the front yard, you know, from their car, and I picked them up and put them in the trash, and then the dogs got them. And I knew that it was bull. So drinking was getting drunk, and drinking was lying. All right? And I was really good at drinking and lying as time went on. So, got out of high school, went to college for a little while. Didn't work out. I wasn't focused. All right, here's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be in a position where nobody could tell me what to do. Okay, so we moved from, my parents retired to the South, And I followed them shortly thereafter and met a little Southern girl in Cleveland, Tennessee. Anybody know where that's at? Yeah. Suburb of Chattanooga. And married her about 9 months later. I thought all my problems had been solved because now I had my own life and I could do what I want. And it didn't fix anything. But here's what it did do. It gave me the opportunity. I could start drinking like I wanted to. All right. I started out slow. I didn't drink through high school. I didn't drink and do drugs and any of that stuff through high school and into the what college I went to. I did it as, excuse me, assistant, would you hand me my water, please? That's not my wife, by the way. Okay. So I learned how to drink. All right. I went into the restaurant business about, let's say, I graduated into the restaurant business about 10 years after I got married. Can anybody guess why? Because that's where the booze is. All right. I had a friend that owned a bar in Chattanooga years and years ago. And one night he asked me to be a bouncer for one night because his bouncers didn't show up. I guess they were at a steroid convention. And and I said, sure. And you know what we did after? We sat around the bar and we drank. And I said, this is the life for me. Within a year, I quit what I'd been doing for nearly 10 years and went into the restaurant business. And it was awesome. Okay? Because it's different now, but 30 years ago, think about that, guys, 30 years ago, people drank like crazy in the restaurant business. It was expected. Okay? We would take, before a shift, we would take a bottle of Cuervo and shot glasses and pour all the kitchen staff shots so you could get fired up for the shift. That was expected. It's what we did. Okay? And this wasn't little tiny restaurants. This is big old corporation kind of deals, you know. Outback, Longhorn, that's who I worked for 10 years. So anyway, so my drinking career continued to progress. And while it did, okay, I had gotten divorced because at some point she said, I don't like how you're drinking. And I said, what did I say? I don't care. Okay, I didn't care. I had two daughters. I didn't care about my daughters. I said I did. I said, love them more than anything in the world. And I could tell stories about how sweet and precious they were. But given the choice between drinking and being with my family, I chose drinking. Okay. As my drinking went on, I started doing other things. Anybody understand what I'm going to talk about? Other things? Okay. I did other things, Dawn. I did other things. And there used to be a doctor that worked here named Early, and he used to say, what, I'm addicted to more? Anything, it didn't matter. Whatever I could get to put into my body to make me feel different so I didn't have to deal with me. And that's what I did. Okay. As it started getting near the end of my drinking, besides doing other things, I started having all sorts of other issues. Legal? Anybody ever had legal issues? Okay. Relationship? I wouldn't stay in a relationship more than a few months. All right? Because I was really good at getting into them, but I was really bad at staying in them. Okay? Because people would figure out my BS. Right? I would say at the beginning. In fact, near the end, I would say at the beginning, I just want you to know I'm an alcoholic. Oh, you're not an alcoholic. Come on. 3 months later, they're like, I wish you would go away, and I'm calling the cops. And guess what? They did. And guess what? I got brought out on several occasions. Look at me now. I look so sophisticated. So I started having problems with legal and relationships, and I turned my back on my family and my daughters, and I then started having issues with my job, because in my business, people were expected to drink some, but they weren't expected to break into the restaurant at 3 a.m. in the morning and pass out on the bar. I thought that's what everybody did, okay? They frowned on it. They really did. So I started going to treatments, those little 72-hour deals. Okay, there used to be commercials on TV. If you don't go to Charter or whatever, please go somewhere. So I would go in feeling like crap, and mostly because my boss had told me that if I didn't go into some sort of treatment, that he was going to fire my butt, okay? So I would go in, and I would feel terrible, and physically, and mentally, and emotionally. By the second day, all right, I'm ready to get out. I am not staying in this place. You know, the old proverbial, you know, let's make an ashtray, clay ashtray, or sew a wallet, and that's the kind of places that I went to for a long time. Ridgeview was my 10th treatment center. There used to be this thing called insurance. I mean, and insurance was really good then, okay? You'd walk in with your card and they'd say, you can stay for 30 days, all right? And some treatment centers, I went to a treatment center that had massage therapists, people cut your hair, a swimming pool, a hot tub. That was in Chattanooga. I miss that place. The beginning of the end was fast approaching. I want to make one quick statement. I've heard in a lot of speaker meetings, I've heard a lot of people say they didn't know when they crossed that line from heavy drinking or heavy using to alcoholism or addiction. I do. And it's really weird. It was like one of those moments where everything seemed clear. I was living in a one-bedroom apartment down in Morrow, and I was a super heavy drinker, but I guess I hadn't passed to that point yet. I remember waking up. No, I'm sorry. I remember coming to, okay, and I looked around at the carnage, which would have been a whole lot of bottles and a whole lot of other stuff. And I said, you know what I'm going to do today? I am going to get drunk this morning. I had never drank in the morning, ever. I always thought that only drunks did that, right? So I decided I was going to just get drunk that day. And I had a thought, and this is God's honest truth. I thought, if I do this, I'll never go back. You know what I did? Anybody guess? I got drunk. Okay. And that was the beginning of the end of that stupid spiral that so many of us come to, that stepping off point. All right. I went through a few more relationships, if you can call that. A friend of ours likes to say taking hostages. I understand that. When I first heard that term years ago, when I first walked in the doors, I didn't get it because I thought that I was the greatest guy in the world and that they should have been pleased to be in a relationship with me. Now I look back and I'm like, I took a lot of hostages and I hurt a lot of people. Maybe it's because I'm getting older and maudlin, I don't know, but I hurt a lot of people. So let's keep going, because I got to hurry up. I've fallen into the thing where I talk more about my drinking than I am good about the other stuff. It's your fault. Oh, that guy Eddie, you know, anybody know him? He was my roommate in treatment. Am I lying? Ooh, I can tell stories. So finally, May 11th, you know all the misery? You know the misery, you know the pain, you know the stupid stuff we do. May 11th, I had taken a job back into the restaurant business because I couldn't live on $8 an hour, okay? So I was in Orlando, Florida, and we were down there for 10 days opening a restaurant for this company, and after about 3 days, what do you think I started doing? Because I didn't tell my sponsor I was going to go until after. Trust me when I tell you this. Never tell your sponsor where you're going until you're there. I'm kidding, okay? But I told my sponsor, Rick, hey, Rick, I'm in Orlando. And the phone clicked. He was one of those sort of crusty sponsors. He just clicked the phone. Okay. May 11th, I had my last drink. And then I'll get on to recovery. Okay. There was a bar next to the hotel that I was staying at. You know what I'm going to talk about, don't you? Uh-huh. I had been drinking all day. My partner had given me the afternoon off, so I went and got a couple 12 packs, and I was drinking, and there was a bar, and I thought, you know what I should do? I should go and meet people, all right? So I go over to the bar, and I started ordering double shots of this stuff called Sambuca. Don't drink it. It's really bad. And two young women walked into the bar and sat down next to me, and they looked at me, and I looked at them, and I thought, they're going to love me. They're just going to love me. All right? So I bought them both a drink, and they looked over and nodded. Now, what I know today is what they were looking at was a pukey-ass, nasty drunk. Okay? But what I thought was, this is it. This is it. Finally, I reached over to the one nearest me to say something really like cool and sophisticated, and I couldn't talk. It was just bleh. And that, seriously, that's what I remember. They both started laughing. Now, isn't that a funny way for me to decide that I'd had enough? They both started laughing at me. All right. I paid my tab. I walked out of there. I haven't had a drink since. I don't know why it's that. It takes what it takes, guys. It takes what it takes, whether it's pain, whether it's embarrassment, whether it's finding out you're dying of cancer, whatever it is, it takes what it takes. Okay. So I got back here. And I saw my peeps, and a lot of them are sitting right there, right now. I saw my peeps, and what you know what they said? They said, I never had to be alone again. And they said, I never had to drink again. And I was finally in a place where I could be honest and say, show me how. And that I'll listen. Okay? So he told me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I went to about 400 meetings in my first year. Because I was scared to frickin' death that I was going to drink again. I was, because I knew what lay there. You know, life didn't magically get better the day I said I'm not drinking again. I still had a lot of problems. One, that I had ran from a lot of fiscal responsibilities. I owed a lot of people a lot of money. Okay. So I had to deal with that. I had to make amends. Amends are awesome. And I'm not being facetious. Amends, when they're sanctioned and talked about with you and your sponsor, are one of the greatest things you can do. because it gave me peace. Okay? So, I went to a bunch of meetings. I came here to Ridgeview every Thursday. We went to aftercare, and then we had alumni after, and we had dinner with these people, and I looked at all these same people all the time. We went to some of the same meetings. I went to a lot of meetings on the campus that first year. Okay? And there's some of them, again, that are in this room who really love me, who when I started going back into my bullshit, like trying to think that I knew what I was doing, they would tell me, you don't know what you're doing. It's the truth. Bill, you're wrong. I don't like hearing I'm wrong. Even today, I don't like hearing I'm wrong, okay? But they were straight up with me. And I learned how to be honest. I did not come out of the May 12th, 1999 womb and say, I'm the most honest thing in the world now. I still had a level of deception, okay, because I didn't want you to know who I was. But I started working the steps. My first sponsor, as I mentioned earlier, he was a crusty guy, okay? If you didn't do everything exactly how he said when he said, for instance, he said, you call me every night at 6 o'clock. I don't care what you're doing. If you call at 5 after 6, I won't talk to you. So every now and then I would call later. And his wife would answer the phone. She would say, Rick says to call tomorrow. I didn't like him. But he fired me a few months later because I lied to him. Okay? My next sponsor is one of the gentlemen in this room. And he took me through the steps and the way it felt that it was so gentle, okay? If you're looking for a sponsor, all right, different people need different things. I needed somebody to be gentle with me. I didn't need somebody to beat me over the head with their big book. Okay, that's just me, all right? So I worked the steps. I continued to work the steps. I made a really big mistake that has ended up being one of the best things that ever happened to me. I met my wife before I had a year of sobriety. Does anybody know what that happens when you do that? You're in big trouble. Do you remember this happening, Paul? Oh, yeah. And they all said, dummy. And then our closest friends, the people that love us the most, said, you two are not to see each other until you got a year. And we just did it. We just did it. I didn't have a choice. They'd have killed me. All right. And Susan and I have been together for 22 years. And she's in the program. She has 26 years. She's awesome, and she sponsors a lot of women, and she has such solid recovery. What it's been like today, her life has been just so stupid good. Okay. I'm not going to tell you that things haven't happened. I will tell you this. The first 10 or 11 years that we were together, nearly everything went right. Everything we touched, everything we did, everywhere we went was like a dream. And I thought, I deserve this. God knew that he was going to just love me when I got sober, and he's going to give me all sorts of great things and jobs and money. And then the poop hit the fan. And in a quick succession of time, let's see, our house burned down. I lost both my parents. My wife was in a really bad accident where she decided that she wanted to eat a curb walking the dogs one day, and was in the hospital for a while. It was really bad. All sorts of bad. Oh, my partners that I've been with for 20 years, They came in, I went into the office one day so we could talk strategy, and they said, "You're fired. Bye." That wouldn't rock me. 20 years. Are you kidding me? All right. It was the greatest thing that ever happened to me in my work life. All right. I'll tell you why real quick. I got 7 minutes. Is that right, sir? He'll tell me if I go too long. Believe me. They said, go away. And it blew me the frick away. Because I was the guy that, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I ran the company. They were the money guys. I did all the operations for this little 150 restaurant chain, and I thought that I was the shit. I guess they didn't think I was the shit. So they said, go away, and they owed us a little money from our little partnership we had with them. And I went for 2 months, and I couldn't find a job. And I was starting to get really depressed, okay? And then one day I'm looking on the internet, and I see an article about Mercedes-Benz Stadium and the Atlanta Falcons. Boo. I work for them. I can boo them, okay? So I see this deal where they're going to be opening a new part of their business, and out of the clear blue sky, I just found an email address for their HR department and said, here I am, this is what I've been doing. And 3 days later, I'm down at the office and they hired me. Now, let me tell you why it was so great. Okay, my company had started, the old company had started really falling apart, and we'd given up insurance and benefits and everything else except salary, and we'd even taken hits on salary to try to keep the company going. Okay? So this terrible thing happens, and they fire me, and all this old fart ego crap. You know, I'm old. I'm not going to be able to get a job. We're going to end up being, you know, homeless, and we're not going to be able to feed our golden retrievers and all this stuff. So within 4 or 5 days, I have a job with this company. I just went down for an interview. I had a couple letters of recommendation, and they hired me, okay? And I went to work for them, and they gave me this job where the first year or year and a half, I just set my own schedule, did my own deal, all right? And they paid me okay, and they had great benefits and insurance. A year later, all right, where I left, I was fired from a job that didn't have any benefits. See, I think I know what's best for me all the time. All right, my higher power laughs because he put me in this job to where when I was diagnosed with this funky thing I got, all right, every benefit in the world. On top of that, the company said, because I had to have a stem cell transplant. The company said, take off all the time you need. And I did. 2 months. 2 months. And they tell me all the time, if you don't feel like working tomorrow, or if you're too tired or something's up, take off. All right? With no insurance, we would have been bankrupt because my chemo is $21,000 a month. In insurance in this country, awesome. $21,000 a month. I couldn't afford to pay it. I would have had to die, or we would have went bankrupt. All right. God, my higher power has watched out for me throughout this whole deal, and I didn't even know it, guys. I didn't even know it. I thought I was doing a pretty good job on my own. Now, you've just listened to me tell you what my life was like. If anybody thinks that I was doing a good job, that's really nuts, all right? Because my life was crap. So, what do I do today? Yeah, I try to do what my first case manager told me to do when I first came back in. Oh, by the way, me and another guy, this guy Sean, he was there at Ridgeview when Eddie and I were there. He was down the hall, okay? But he was from Boston, and we didn't like him. His roommate in treatment was an ex-professional football player that liked to have the temperature in their room like at 58 degrees because he was huge. How big was he? Yeah, 340, 350. You know, he was one of those ex-NFL guys who don't look as good later, you know, lineman kind of guy. He was pretty bad. So Sean would come out of the room, he's like, this fucking guy. And he'd be there like this, all right? It's awesome. My life has turned out so incredible. Through the bad stuff, yes, all right. But considering what would have happened and where I would be today if I hadn't quit drinking and I hadn't turned my will and my life over to the care of a higher power. So let me go back to what I was told by our guy, Richard Morgan. Sean and I were in what was called, this really makes me proud. We were in, Billy, were you in that one too? We were in the relapse track. Now think about what that means. All right, it means guys who keep coming back to treatment because they can't get sober. We were proud of this. All right, relapse track. It made us sound like we were professional drunks. I guess we were. Anyway, Richard said, go to meetings. All right, read the big book, work the steps, pray and meditate. Be of service to other folks. All right? I'm no professional at this, and there's been times I've gone to more meetings and times that I haven't, and there's been times I've made mistakes. But I've tried to keep sight of that through this whole time. Make it simple, because I'm a simple guy, okay? I may seem incredibly bright and intelligent, but I'm really simple, and I needed to be kept simple. Just go to meetings. Call your sponsor. I talked to my sponsor yesterday. Okay. I got 23 years and he has 36 or 37. All right. I don't have to do that. Bull. I got to keep doing what got me there. Because if at some point I decide to quit doing what got me there, I'm going to be hanging out with you kids again. And I believe that. Can I quit now? I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.